I've been thinking about it. And I think the best way to start this evening, which is week three in the 12-week series of A Way of Life That Works, is with a story. There was once a king who was out hunting. And he came across a beautiful young man taking care of his flock of sheep who reminded the king of his lost son. So the king went over to the boy and asked him who he was. And the young man replied that he was the son of a shepherd from a nearby village. But there was something about this boy's face that so moved the king. It reminded him of his son that was stolen by his enemies when he was a tiny baby. And this boy had a mark on his face that was so reminiscent of that. He just wasn't sure that what the boy said was entirely true. So he asked him where he lived. He said, I live in a nearby village. He told him the village. And the king gets down, back on his horse, goes to the nearby village, and finds the man who's supposed to be his father. And he asks the man, is that your son? And the father of the shepherd says, yes, that's my son. Of course it's my son. Who else would it be? And the king was so certain about that feeling that he had that he began to interrogate the father and to threaten him. That's how serious he was about this. And at the point of being threatened, the father backed off. And he said, okay, you're right. He's my son, but not technically. Because technically, years ago when he was a tiny baby, I was in the woods and I came upon this little tiny baby in the woods. Somebody left this tiny baby in the woods. He would have been killed. So I took him and I thought, what a gift from heaven to have found this child, the child I didn't have. So I've been taking care of him ever since. And it made perfect sense to the king because the king had heard that his enemies had stolen his son when he was a tiny baby, taken him into the woods and left him there to be killed by wild animals. But this man found him in time and raised him as his own son. So the king goes back. I want to read you this line. The king goes back to the young boy who's a shepherd and tells him the truth about who he is. Once the young man realized that he was not the son of a shepherd, but the son of a king, he had no choice but to accept his real identity. Once the young man realized that he was not the son of the shepherd, but the son of the king, he had no choice but to accept his real identity. He had no choice but to. You would think he would have jumped. I would have. Oh, my God. Would you not, thinking that you were the daughter of a shepherd, then to find out you're the daughter of a king? Think of the clothes. Think of the money. Think of the stuff you can finally have that you couldn't have. I mean, as a shepherd, I'm sure you get, you know, one or two nice clothing items to wear yearly at Easter time. But as the son of a king, man, you're going to be wearing all kinds of great clothes and change them twice a day. And excuse me, have somebody help you change them. Oh, my God. But he had no choice, which is a really interesting line. Because I would have thought he would have jumped, and he didn't. We don't jump when we find out who we are. I'm going to tell you one of the most marvelous lines from the Course in Miracles. It says, the will of life is for your perfect happiness. The will of life is for you. It doesn't just say happiness. Happiness is very nice. It says for your perfect happiness. Right? The Tao Te Ching says something like that. It says all of life is a movement toward our perfection. It uses the same word. The Greek root of the word, though, perfection, not towards you being like some perfect people-pleasing person so everybody likes you, but of course inside you kind of hate yourself because you don't know who you are because you're trying to be something for everybody else. Not that perfect. The kind of perfect that's whole, the kind of perfect in the Greek root of the word that means whole and complete. And whole and complete, man, when we're whole and complete, we are in our happiness. And the Course in Miracles is saying life is a movement towards your perfection, towards your wholeness, towards being what you're meant to be, towards being the son of a king. And beyond that, when you know your place, when you know who you are, something is going to happen to you that you don't have to ask for, pray for, or wish for, or desire for. You're going to enter into happiness. And it's going to be a perfect kind of happiness because it's not happiness that comes from something. It's happiness from coming that comes from knowing who you are. And man, that's not negotiable. It's not negotiable. Week one, we talked about the branch that got almost broken off from the tree, almost. And it lived for a couple of months all by itself, but not getting the nourishment from the tree in which it was broken off from. Week two, we talked about the wave in the ocean. And when we mistake ourselves for the wave, rather than the wave that is infused, that is made of the ocean from which it comes, there is no wave without an ocean. The wave is the ocean. When we know, and you're going to notice, every teaching, every story takes us back to this place of perfection, but not the way we understand it. It means completeness, wholeness, where we are one self, right? Where we are one self, not somewhere thinking we're the son of a king, sorta, and we're the son of the shepherd. See, he had to make a choice. He had to choose one. That's why it was hard, and that's why I read that line. He had no choice but to accept his real identity. He had to make a choice. We have to make a choice. We can't have our ex-lover somewhere with all of his t-shirts in our closet and mementos and love letters in drawers standing in our life saying, oh, where are all the good men? I can't believe I'm not attracting a good man. We can't have the old guy and the new guy. We can't be sleeping in the old guy's t-shirts waiting for the new guy to come in. Oh, we'll let go of that t-shirt when he finally comes. We can't have both. We have to make a choice. And that's the part we don't like. Even in the story, there is a moment where he has to make a choice. See, we too have to make the choice of whether we are going to stand on the side of knowing we are that wave or knowing we are that ocean. If you weren't here last week, do yourself a favor and listen to last week's talk. Because you cannot live the same life thinking you're the wave as you will when you're knowing you are the ocean expressing as a wave. Those are two utterly different lives. Somebody can push all your boundaries around when you're a wave, but they wouldn't think of doing it when you know you're the ocean expressing as a wave. Somebody can utterly disrespect you when you think you are a wave disconnected from that ocean on your own, doing your own thing, your own might. But when you are in the place of your I am the ocean expressing as a wave, when you know you are the son of a king, as this story says, nobody would even think of disrespecting you. In fact, that's not going to be an issue in your life at all. Why? Because when we stand in the place of knowing who we are, everybody's going to know it with us. Right? That's why it is so important. Week one, what did we talk about? We said we only have one problem. Right? Oh, I love this guy. Just you're marvelous. He's got things to do in a minute. He knows the answers. I love it. And And he raised his hand for a happy marriage even though his wife was punching him in the arm. Oh my God, he knows he's the ocean. We have one problem, that problem is separation. Not separation from the money we want to have. Separation from who we actually are, from the truth, from the bigness, the largeness of who we actually are. And we got to pick one. Because we actually can't be both simultaneously. We cannot be in that bigness of what it means to be the son of the king and simultaneously be the son of the shepherd. We can't be small and big at the same time, but we have to make a choice. And we don't want to make a choice. And yet there's this old story. I don't know if these stories are true or false. Somebody probably years ago, you know, was given a dollar a sentence and came up with these stories. But they're good stories, and they're still here, and I'll tell them. So the story goes there was a great general, and he was going off to battle, and he was going to fight the enemy who far outnumbered him and his people, his soldiers. So he went to do it anyway. He puts the boats together, he takes the equipment, puts them on the boats, he takes all his soldiers, puts them on the boats, and off they go into enemy territory. They land on the shore of the enemy's country. They take off all the equipment, all the soldiers, and then he gives the order to burn the ships. Right? Before they went to battle, he gathered them all together. The ships are burning. They're smoking. And he says this, look at these boats. You see how they burn. By the time they are done, there will be nothing left of them. And we have no way to return home. So here is the deal, he said. We either win or we perish. And indeed, they won. And why did they tell this story? Why has this story lasted this long? Whether it's true or false, it feels so righteous because there is a moment in our life where we have to burn what came before in our life. Even if it's just a belief about who we are, we have to burn what we have been dependent upon, believing in. We have to burn it in order not to have it anymore so we can walk forward. We have no choice but to make the choice. And as long as we think we can choose both, we don't move. We don't move. We either win or we perish, he said, because if we lose, we're dead men. And what we don't understand, see, we see it in a plant all the time. You look at a plant, you don't water it, you don't take care of it, you kind of half-heartedly take. So you put it in a window, but you know you live a busy life, and we're all New Yorkers, and we're all fabulously and important and everything. So who has time to take care of a plant? So it's kind of on its own. Many people's plants are just there on their own. And you come back later, and you discover, well, I haven't given it Miracle-Gro, I haven't watered it, I didn't give it much sunlight, didn't do much, and you know what? The thing is brown, and it's kind of dying. And we understand why. When it comes to us, the same thing happens, and we have no idea why we are withering, why we're dying inside, why we've lost the juice of life, why we have lost the will to live, why we've entered into a depression and feel like one foot in front of the other feels almost uphill and impossible to make the older we get. The sweetness of life is long gone, and we don't put the two together that we only have one problem, and that problem only have one problem, and that problem is separation. Oh my gosh, it is singly the most important revelation to understand. Why? Because perfect happiness cannot come to us unless we know that we are one self, and we have to pick which self that is. That's a choice we have to make. That's our first step towards perfect happiness. We think first step towards perfect happiness, tighter ass, right? First step towards happiness? Not being bald anymore. First step towards that six-pack abs. First step towards happiness, the job that I wanted. Somebody publish my book. Open that restaurant. It be a success. We have 100 ideas for our first steps to perfect happiness. But if the word perfect wasn't in there, we'd be having a different conversation. Truly, perfect happiness is the perfect shade of Chanel red lipstick in my book. I mean, to find the perfect red is an art form, and it has taken the majority of my life. The problem is the moment, have you noticed, the moment you find your color? Yes, they discontinue that. What the hell is that? You go back and you say, here is $500. I want 18 tubes so that I'll have it, you know, until Social Security comes around. And they're like, oh, we discontinued that. We have a nice shade of gray taupe for you. We think if it were just happiness, it would be a thing and we'd be right. But perfect happiness requires something else. Perfect means whole. It means complete. It means we have got to be in a place of wholeness, of completeness. The Tao talks about it all the time. Hold fast, it says, to the power of one. Everything changes when we understand we have got to be one self. Because that one problem, our only problem, the problem that is foundational underneath everything else we think is our problem, begins there. That we haven't picked the one we want to be. We haven't decided if we're the son of a shepherd or the son of the king. We haven't decided if we're going to be just the wave or if we are a wave in an ocean that carries us and we let it and we ask it to and we call out for help from it. What's the point of being a son of a king if you can't use the powers of the king to enlarge your territory? See, we have to make that choice. There was a gentleman that I worked with years ago. And when he was a young boy, his mother took him out of school one afternoon and said, you have to come with me, we have to go see something. Which was very odd, very unusual, because she was always very much about his being studious. And she takes him out of school, on a bus, into the city, they didn't live in the city, into the city, into a strange apartment complex, into the apartment complex to a certain apartment, he had never been there before, and she didn't explain one thing. Up the stairs to the front door of somebody's apartment. And then she explained something to him. She said, I found this address and a key in your father's suit jacket. And that's why we're here. So she puts the key in the door and opens the door, and through his eyes, he is seeing this. And he remembers walking in the vestibule, and he sees an apartment he has never seen before, but he sees clearly that a family lives here. It's a well-lived-in apartment. And he can see there are pictures everywhere, and couches and pillows and, you know, everything, and toys and a television, and photographs all along the walls and the books. Bookshelves of his father with this other family. His father and another mother, his father and other children. And he said, I had to step away from my mom for a minute. He was 9. He said, I just stepped away and I stood against a back wall where she couldn't see me. And he said, in that moment, I knew that life was never going to be sweet again. In that moment, when we learn something about life that surprises us or disturbs us or spooks us, something unexpected, something hard, something heartbreaking, something wrong, something bad, something jarring, when that happens, we literally make a decision in our life. From now on. You can start it with those words, because for 20 years of doing soul sessions, that's the words it always starts with. From now on. And you fill in the blank with the decision you just made about what you just learned about life and what it means about you. In that moment, when something happens, we separate from ourselves. Those are the moments we separate from ourselves. And he separated from the sweetness, and he knew it. Life was never going to be sweet again. That's the feeling. Whether he said those words exactly unconsciously, that's what moved through his body. That's what he felt. That was the choice he felt was the only choice he could make. And within the month, he had diabetes, something he had never had before. The end of the month, he had diabetes. 1 month. And sweetness had been an issue in his life ever since. Right? It's genius. It is positively genius. Our symptoms, our illnesses, our troubles, the effects of what we don't want in our life en route to getting our happiness that we want. But if we stop for a moment and stop settling for just happiness for a moment, and look at the words perfect happiness, perfect, because that's what the will of life wants. It's a movement. Life is a movement, the Tao says, toward our wholeness. Course in Miracles says the same thing, but it adds happiness at the end of it. I love that. I don't want to just be whole. I want to be whole and happy. I want to be a happy whole person, right? Doesn't everybody? It adds happiness, which is so important, but the happiness that comes from knowing your place, from being perfectly here, not from hiding from yourself. Not hiding parts of yourself. Not being split into two. Which is the only problem we have. In those moments when we make decisions about what life is, and how can we not make a decision? The decision he made was completely accurate. Who wouldn't make that decision? We learn about love. We learn about joy. We learn about who we are. We learn about money. We learn about everything at the feet of our parents. Our parents are our gods. There are saviors, there are everything, there are giants. Whatever it is we learn at their feet is ours. So we end up decades later looking for happiness, forgetting the perfect part, and all life is doing is pushing us. And you might not like that word, so use the Tao word, because it's a lot gentler, less direct than I am. It's moving us toward perfect happiness. And we say, perfect happiness? What the hell are you talking about? I don't have the guy. I don't have the money. I don't have the this. My daughter's not talking to me. My son's not talking to me. My mom's not talking to me. This one, my boss isn't treating me right. We have a litany of things to prove how life can't possibly be moving me into my happiness. And we're right. Because life isn't moving us into our happiness. It's moving us into our perfect happiness. Oh my God. Such a difference. Feel that for a moment. It's almost, for those of you with a sensitive touch, a little bit orgasmic. In a minute, right? In 1 minute, if you sat down with the concept that life was moving you into your perfect happiness, not toward your happiness, meaning leaving us broken, leaving this guy separated from the sweetness of life, unable to trust in love. You know, when he grows up, he's not going to be able to make a commitment. How in the world are you going to commit to love and ever trust anybody after an experience like that? Ah, wait. We say, in the age of therapy and support groups, it was my damn dad's fault. The reason I'm such a mess is because my dad did this to me. Or fill in the blank. But if this were true, if we were absolutely powerless over those moments in our life, how in the world could this teaching be moving us into a perfect happiness that's not possible because things got screwed up in the beginning over which we had no control and now can't do anything about? That means this truth isn't true for me. And we talk about that all the time. Because as long as we don't understand that every truth is true for us, every last truth is true for us, we're going to opt out along the way and say, yeah, well, you don't know my mom. Right? You don't know what I had to deal with growing up. I mean, I hear your story and I feel bad for you, but man, you haven't heard my story. Oh my God. And we all have such stories. If we were left powerless, dangling, with no ability to make a difference, then that separation that happened when we were 9, excuse me, that looked like it happened to us, is a fait accompli. Nothing we can do. Poor us. All that's left for us to do is write a memoir, right? And make some money off it and go on whoever Oprah's next successor show is going to be. Maybe Rosie, when Rosie comes back. She likes celebrities, but celebrity fucked up people are also good too because they sell a lot of books. That's the only choice that's left to us, right? The genius of the truth is that it's true for everybody regardless of what has ever happened to you. It can make a crazy promise like perfect happiness. And that word has an outrageous implication. It means there is no happiness for you or me. Even if you get every last thing you ever wanted to get, ever. When I worked with a woman who worked on Wall Street, a doll, she worked the usual 14, 16-hour days at one of the big three firms down on Wall Street. She had amassed at her young age of 34, $8 million. At 34, sitting on a mountain of $8 million, single, owned her own place. She was sitting pretty, and she said, in the middle of the year, she said, okay, I'm going to get a bonus at the end of this year because I hate my job. It was so not who she was, but she did it well. She was very analytical, and she made a deal with herself. She said, I hate this job. It's making me ill. I know that. It was making her sick, and she knew that. She said, at the end of the year, when I get my end-of-the-year bonus, I'm going to get 2 point whatever it was, million. Then I'm going to have the 10, and you know what? That's my number. That's my number. When I get the 10, that's my number. So she worked the rest of the year. She got her number. She was sitting on 10 point whatever million dollars. I saw her the week after that came through. And she said, you know, if I go one more year, right? Right? And we think this is a story about her. Oh, man, what a loser. This is our story. The King's Son, that's our story. This truth is our truth. Perfect happiness is what is promised us. And every story, every fairy tale, every myth, they're all about the same thing. You got to choose who you're going to be, and nobody can do it for you. And you say, look at this poor guy. And the truth says, yeah, look at this poor guy. Now that he's living as a poor shepherd, right? Now that he's living as a poor shepherd, now that we've come to the place where we are poor, where we are broken, where we are begging for the few things we think we don't have, asking for money, owing credit card debt that we can't possibly pay off, not knowing what we're supposed to be in our life, who we're supposed to be, how to love somebody, how to take the weight off, how to treat our family better, not knowing anything, we're broken. We're a shepherd. It's our job to understand that we have no choice but to choose to heal that separation. We have no choice. We think we do. We say, oh, I don't want to look at that. That's too painful. We have no choice but to accept that we are the son of the king, or else we won't ever know who we are, and we will walk around this world broken and poor, thinking that that's actually who we are. That's actually who we are because we only have one problem, and the one problem is separation from the truth about who we are. So we walk around as the I, not the I am. Talked about that week one. We walk around as the small self, little self, when actually all along we are our greatest self with the Anishkap S. That's how the Bhagavad Gita teaches it. It tells you change the case on the word self from a little, lowercase s to a large uppercase s, and now you're going to find the difference is you're not the wave, you're the wave that knows it's the ocean, that every property the ocean has. Everything in the kingdom of the king belongs to his son. His son doesn't have to beg for it. Oh, daddy, can you give me a couple of bucks so I can ride the horse to my girlfriend's? It's all his. The treasury is his. It's his. Everything his father is, he is. Everything in the kingdom is his. He inherits it. It belongs to him, not because he begs for it or asks for it or prays for it or desires it or wishes it or tries to be a good person. None of that. It's his. The wave doesn't have to ask the ocean for anything. Everything the ocean is, the wave already is. There's a great line that I love. It says, all that I am, I have. Take a look. Yeah, people with the pencils, good for you. Go to that one. That is a good one. Man, I'd be writing it down too. All that I am, I have. When I know what I am, I have everything that I know I am. When I know I'm the child of a king, when I know I'm the daughter of a king, we know who we are. When we know we're the ocean, the whole ocean belongs to me. I have it. It's mine. I own it. It's what I am. When I know that I am a wave and I'm not connected to any of the other waves and I don't know there's an ocean under me, I don't even get the ocean, I have no idea that there's something other than me, bigger than me, greater than me, within me and beyond me, all I have are the parameters, or should I say, the perimeter of how big that little wave is going to be. And those little waves, they're little. They're little. Not much happens with a little wave. You can't even knock over a three-year-old one of those little waves. You can't. Right? Maybe a skinny three-year-old, but not a chubby three-year-old. It's just a wave. All you have is what you know you are. Dig that for just one moment, because, man, that's a key. All these things are keys. And what are they keys to? Here's what they're keys to. Tao is the treasure house, right? Tao, life, God, mystery, reality, the absolute, mind, call it what you will. Tao, life, is the treasure house, the true nature, the secret source of everything. It's the great wealth of those who are awake and the great protector of those still sleeping. It's the true nature. It's the secret source of everything. It's the treasure house. Where is it? We scoot down and we find, oh, look, here it is. Where do you find the treasure house? Who doesn't want that? You eat a crack. I used to eat Cracker Jacks for only one purpose as a child. Because that treasure in that box was mine. And when you don't have any money at all to be able to have a treasure that's yours, you will eat like the shittiest candy in the world to get there. Even if all your teeth rot out, you don't care. You're getting that damn ring, right? So where's the treasure house? Where do we look for the treasure house? It says when the emperor is crowned or the three ministers installed, they receive a gift of jade and horses. But how can this compare to sitting still and gaining the treasure of the Tao? Within, this is where the world's treasure has always been. Where is everything in life moving you toward and leading you toward? It's leading you toward solving the one problem that we have to solve in order for all the other problems that come from that problem to be solved. So what does life do when it moves us in the direction of our perfect happiness? It points to the places that are broken. It points to the places where we're lost in believing we're a poor shepherd. It points to the places where we have a debt that we have amassed that we must have been sleeping. We can't believe how big our debt is. We can't breathe. It points to that. It points to the place that's the empty bed in our house saying, where are all the great guys? Or, alternately, where are all the great girls? It points to that place. It points us to the place of where our perfect happiness can be if we understand we have no choice but to accept who we're going to be. We are either the son of the shepherd, or we're either the son of the king, and we can't be both, and we can't choose both, and we can't have both. We can't hold on to the story of our childhood blaming everybody for being a poor shepherd, because you know what? We'll be a poor shepherd 30 years from now. And we'll have less friends because we'll be so bitter and cranky, we'll have worn them all out, right? They still like us now because we're kind of, you know, young and good looking and stuff like that. She said, middle-aged woman calling herself young, that's a good one. Okay, so, hey, I am the daughter of a king. So I can actually say anything I want because all the people in my kingdom will not argue with me, right? That's why we're married 20 years. She says, yes, dear. Yes, dear. You are young and fabulous. Yes, dear. We have to pick one. And the one we pick is going to make all the difference. We have to pick the one that's going to get us back to wholeness, get us back to power, get us back to our one self. There is a line, I love it, and it says, I am one self. I love that line. And you think, oh, that's so heady, that's so conceptual. No, it's not. I am one self. Which self is it going to be? The poor shepherd might walk around with all his poor stories for the rest of his life. Certainly this guy could have done that. The man I worked with had a real good reason why he should have stayed broken and poor as a shepherd. Or you do this. Once the young man realized that he was not the son of a shepherd, but the son of a king, he had no choice but to accept his real identity. Something's got to be burned. We have got to burn something. In the book, The Prayer Chest, that we spoke about week one, he goes up to the attic, Joseph Hutchinson, and he burns the contents of everything he's inherited by his parents and his parents' parents and his parents' parents. Why? Because as long as we are carrying what happened to us as children, what was told to us as children, even secondhand faith, somebody else's belief, somebody else's idea about who we are, we cannot make for ourselves the choice, find out who we are and choose to be what we want to be, because we've inherited a system of beliefs, ideas, and opinions that belongs to everybody but us. And you know what? Many of us have people around us telling us we are the poor shepherd. Tell me that ain't true. All we have to do is take a little walk through our Rolodex, right? To find out how many of those people do not wish us well. And some of those people happen to be in our family, right? Right? So here we have a situation. Joseph burned the contents of his attic. He burned the stuff that had been sitting in the attic upstairs in his head, where we carry everything we know about who we are and make our decisions. And he burned it. And when he burned it, like the ships were burned, you're either going to win or you're going to perish. One of two things is going to happen, because we're afraid we're going to perish. We're afraid we're going to die. We get rid of some things. We get rid of some people. We make the decision. We are the son of a king. We are a wave that is filled, that is infused, that is an individualization of the ocean. Sure, a lot of people aren't going to join us on that journey. We serve them better when we're broken, and when we're poor, and when we're commiserating with them. We know that, but we have no choice but to accept that if we only have one problem, then it's time to heal that problem. And if it means going back to the moment 9 years old and making another decision, if it means looking at a place that is painful, if it means making an appointment with somebody and telling the truth about a secret you haven't told anybody because carrying it is making you so sick, if it is about putting down an addiction that you need to put down finally because you can't move past it unless you do, what we talked about last week is you use the thing we talked about week one that is ingenious. Thy will be done. And thy does not mean some man in the sky. Thy is that ocean of powerful consciousness, that is dynamic energy, that is what and who we are, that can be called the king, that can be called the tree, as the Tao will say, with deep roots and a thick trunk. When we say thy, what we're saying is the son of the king in me. Help me remember I am not the son of a shepherd. The ocean in me, help me remember that I am not just one tiny wave in a separate, individual, lost little world about to hit the shore and disappear into the nothingness of the sand. We are calling out to the part of us that knows who we are, and we are asking that part of us to help us choose rightly. And then you'll begin to understand something so marvelous that you can't even believe it until it starts happening to you. You begin to see that everything in your life is not happening to you. It is happening for you. Do not throw tomatoes at me for saying that. Oh, yeah, you don't know my childhood. And I'll say it again. Everything that happens to us is not happening to us. It is happening for us. And what is that law based upon? That all of life is a movement towards our perfect, whole, and complete happiness. Because only when we are whole in ourselves can we attract another whole person to us. The only thing we're going to attract when we're a broken and poor shepherd is a broken and poor shepherd. And then we say, gosh, what's wrong with you? Why don't you pull yourself together? Right? Happiness comes from the place when we are in our whole place, undivided, one self, made the choice. I am. Then having is not an issue because we have everything that we are when we know who we are. We have everything that we have when we know who we are. I have all that I am. If I know I am the son of the king, I have the kingdom. It's mine. It's mine. It dwells within. If I know I'm a wave in a magnificent ocean that moves through me, that is me, that expresses as me, I have the command and the power of the ocean at my disposal. If I know I'm not a lonely branch hanging off a tree, blowing in the wind, but connected to a tree with a thick trunk, the Tao says, and deep roots, so when the wind comes, we're covered. When I know that, I have everything that magnificent, strong, brave, sheltering tree has. And there comes a moment, and this might be it, because I happen to think it's the first step towards perfect happiness, upon which every other kind of happiness rests. Because you don't have to give up anything to have perfect happiness. You don't have to be a nun. You don't have to become a priest. You don't have to go to India. We don't have to do anything. We simply have no choice. And when we understand we have no choice and we have to make that step, we burn the ship. And we know that we're either going to win or we're going to perish. And I'm telling you right here, burn the ship, make the choice, and you will not perish. It will not happen. You will win, and I'll tell you why, because everything in life is a movement toward that exact thing happening. All of life is skewed, is a movement toward your perfect happiness. Enough said.